Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Boom. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a trophy cabinet day in the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. Delighted to welcome Andy Coulson to the show. Andy, as I'm sure many of us will know, is a journalist and political strategist, founder of Coulson Partners, that I'll talk about later on as well, former Downing Street Director of Communications for David Cameron, circa 2010, former News of the World editor too. Why I wanted to speak to you, Andy, apart from the joy and the privilege of curating you through this structure and journey, is I saw you speak at the Entrepreneurs Convention a few months ago. And when you came on stage, I thought it'd be really, really fascinating to try and curate you through this journey. And when I listened to you, I was so struck. It made me think of Dickens, you know, the best of times, the worst of times, and the sort of throne rooms of power in a sort of Shakespearean context. I thought, gosh, what a fantastic story that you've had. We'll contextualize everything as we go along. But first of all, welcome to the show. How's morale? And what's your story of the day, Andy Coulson?
Oh, well, it's great to be with you, Chris. Thanks for inviting me on. And thanks for that very generous intro. It's interesting that you mentioned Dickens. I'm a big Dickens fan. Perhaps we'll talk about it later, but Dickens was quite important to me at a certain point of my life. Maybe we'll pick up on that later. All is well here with me, and I'm very pleased to be spending a bit of time with you.
Lovely. And I've got a very exciting section towards the end, which is show us your QR code, please. So I'll obviously be pointing people to your own podcast, Crisis, What Crisis, and also to Coulson Partners as well. So, yes, what I was so struck with was the sort of, the extraordinary experience of you described 1 minute in a truncated timeline being in a helicopter sandwiched between David Cameron and Obama back in the day. And then again, truncating the timeline, then the helicopter does a bit of a hard landing. And then again, it's a truncated timeline. You find yourself, best of times, worst of times, in a prison cell. So you've had many, many sliding doors, as you described, of your own volition in your life. So for those of us that don't have a sort of reference point to how you describe, what do you do then? What's your favourite way of avoiding or answering that question, Andy, about yourself?
I don't avoid it, and that goes to a central sort of part of my approach, what my sort of belief system, if you want to be a little bit more, you know, kind of airy-fairy about it. I'm not for avoiding the past. I'm not for avoiding failures, and I've had plenty of them. I am for embracing them, putting them to work, but not being defined by them. And that's what I've been busy doing since 2016, really, when my dramas, which had lasted for the previous 5 years, came to an end. And since then, I've been working pretty hard, not at reinventing myself, because I'm not one for reinvention. I am one for, you know, taking your failures and putting them to work and moving forward. I kind of think that's the point of being here, if I can put it that way. And so, in some regards, we've done that pretty successfully. And the business is in good shape, where I absolutely put my experience, the good and the bad, to good use. as a strategic advisor. We do that in and around crisis, but we also do it in other areas that are less sharp, if you like.
Yes.
And I also put it to work with my podcast. That's what the pod is all about, really. You know, my podcast, I'm a big fan of yours, but my podcast is a place where I can sort of shoot some arrows back out into the world that I hope are useful. It's all there for everybody, free. And I get so much from it. So it's done with that sort of idea in mind, but it's also incredibly helpful for me, frankly.
Yes.
You know, when I sit down once a fortnight with someone who's been through a difficult time, invariably far in excess of what I went through, it gives me a fresh dose of perspective. It gives me a fresh dose of gratitude. It gives me a fresh dose of resilience. It's just, the listener can make up, or the viewer can make up their own minds, but I find it helpful.
That's another main hook when I heard you speaking was you said that humour is the most underrated resilience strategy. Because I work as a motivational comedian, and I similarly find podcasting incredibly cathartic for what I learned from my guests as well. So I'm completely in that arena with you as well. And of course, Crisis What Crisis, your podcast, is very beautifully, succinctly put, lessons for when life unravels. And again, I was so struck that obviously in a sporting analogy, you're like a player manager because you absolutely know what it's like to hit, you know, the heights and also rock bottom, which is a sort of fascinating, well, journey to now, a bit like you've prepared your entire life for this moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, it does draw on, I suppose, you know, various parts of my working life. It certainly draws on my time as a journalist. This is before I was an editor, when I was a reporter. I was a showbiz reporter as a young man. So I spent my life, my 20s really, flying around the world, you know, turning left on aeroplanes and interviewing very famous people. It was an amazing way to spend your 20s. Mm. And a lot of those interviews were with very famous people wanting to sit down and share their stories. And so in a way, that's what I'm doing now. The difference now is that there's no agenda. I'm not pursuing a story. This isn't, you know, it's a very different enterprise and exercise. Yes. And I think because of what's happened to me in the interim, both in terms of the jobs that I've done as an advisor, that I think has definitely sort of adjusted my view of storytelling for sure, but also of course my own difficulties mean that my conversations are certainly different to what they were when I was in my 20s, and that's lovely. You know, I really, you know, I find that very satisfying, because it's a sort of, you know, if it's not for anyone else, it proves to me that, you know, I've learned a bit along the way and I've changed a bit along the way. And as a result, I think we end up with a pretty rich conversation. And also, I think some guests know that because obviously I'm super transparent about, you know, the fact that I went to prison for a while, you know, and I've interviewed a number of people who've also been to prison, but most of our guests have not. I think we just sort of get to the point of trust pretty quickly, you know, and that obviously makes for a very good conversation.
And I love the description of yourself, of the fact you feel that you've been a poacher, a gamekeeper, and also game, as in fair game, in the narrative. And again, to the sliding doors of your life that you've turned into an extraordinarily powerful way of helping others when their life unravels. And that, of course, is what Coulson Partners are about too.
Yes, exactly. That's what we're all about, really. Particularly for people who, as I say, have been through or are going through difficulty, but also for people, you know, we work with corporates, we work with private offices, family offices, we work with individuals. You know, more often than not, actually, it's an unrealized opportunity. It's a bit of a frustration that they haven't got the reputation that they need to drive their purpose. And that's what we do, really. We're not PRs in the sort of traditional sense. There are plenty of brilliant PR firms out there, but we're not about fame. We are about providing our clients with exactly the reputation they need to drive their purpose. It's got to be purpose-led. It can't be about, you know, profile and fame in that sense for us and the kind of work that we do. And of course, if crisis comes, then that is obviously a risk to your reputation. Then it's a risk to your values. It's a risk to, you know, every fundamental in your life. And
yes,
you know, we know what that feels like. I know what that feels like. And so we're pretty good people to have in the room.
So it's a very cathartic space you have curated, and I congratulate you for that. And using all the previous life experience, bringing to bear, joining the dots up backwards in order to plow towards your future.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a choice when I sort of emerged from my difficulties in 2015. And two choices for me were, you know, and obviously I was pretty unemployable, bluntly. You know, I've been, you know, comprehensively cancelled is the word that we would use now. And I didn't have a queue of people lining up to employ me, I can tell you. But I did have an offer to write a book and to sort of tell my stories, to go out, you know, and write that kind of book, kick a few shins, you know, tell my stories. And I'm not going to lie to you, I certainly thought about it because I didn't have too many other options, and I've got a, you know, young family to take care of. I didn't quite know what was going to happen next, but I thought hard about it. And actually, what I always wanted to do, this is when I was in Downing Street, my plan was always to see whether or not I could build a business, because I'd only ever been an employee in my life, and the people that I really admire are people who get out and build something for themselves. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do when I, you know, when I step out of politics. But of course, things took a turn, and then I reached that point where I thought, actually, this is going to be difficult. This is probably the more difficult choice, but I don't want to be that bloke who writes that kind of book and who tours the TV studios, and who kind of, you know, becomes even more bloody notorious, and who's just, you know, trying to cash in or leverage the mistakes that he's made in that kind of way, rather than acknowledging that I'd made some pretty epic errors in my professional life, but that I've also had some great success in my professional life. So I'm going to put both of those two things to work, and I'm going to call this business, call some partners. I'm going to put my name over the door so everyone knows who it is and what I am, and it's all there, inescapable anyway on Google. You know, there's no getting away from it, and I didn't even try. And that's what I mean about reinvention, really. I think the book would have required some kind of attempt at reinvention, and it wouldn't have been me. I would have hated it. I know I would have hated it. So I took the other path, established a business, and then, with the help of a lot of other people along the way, not least, you know, my brilliant clients, you know, we've got ourselves into a very good position, and we have a wonderful business now.
And full transparency and full disclosure is what you're applying as a currency, and I think that's something that's incredibly rich and precious, and therefore people can learn and get perspective from it.
Yeah, I think so. That's my view of the world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Listen, there have been some pretty successful reinventions. I think we've just seen a pretty, you know, we're talking the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated. So, you know, there are other routes one can take.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But I think there's a dangerous, as with on that example, I think it would be a very dangerous thing to look at the success or the comeback of Donald Trump and see that as a lesson for life. I think it's an extraordinary set of circumstances, and I think he is an extraordinary human being in the true sense of the word, extraordinary.
Yes.
And I think to think that, you know, the methods that he's deployed are the methods one should deploy to reach a happy life.
Yes.
Or a meaningful life.
It's the pursuit of happiness is the human condition, of course.
I'm not so sure that that is. I'm sure there'll be plenty of people listening to us screaming in disagreement. I don't know, but... that's not for me anyway. That's not the route for me. The route for me was to kind of lean into the failures that I've had in my life, acknowledge them, Also, when I get the opportunity to apologize for them, this is another one of those opportunities. I don't know who's listening to this or watching this podcast, but it may well be someone who is affected by what happened at the News of the World. And so I'll always apologize for the mistakes I made. I don't think I broke the law, I should say. But I certainly messed up as the editor of that newspaper pretty epically. But also to say that, you know, I'm not going to apologize for, you know, for trying to make my life as productive as it can be now. And that's what I'm working very hard at doing. And, you know, that's really the kind of the sort of thread that now runs through my life, is just trying to be as productive as possible.
The conference I saw you speak at, the Entrepreneurs Convention, it was about one word, and it was about persistence. And that was what was fascinating also about your time on the stage, was the fact that, you know, we need to persist in order to, you know, reinvent the narrative to pull ourselves towards our future.
Yeah. Again, I'm not a fan of the word reinvention, because reinvention suggests to me a sort of an erasing,
yes,
of the past, and I'm not for that. But yes, certainly. For me, it is, you know, the word persistence is wholly appropriate and useful. The more important word that sits in my mind every day, really, is productivity. Mm-hmm. That's the am I being productive? On the moments when I'm beating myself up, it's because I feel I haven't been productive enough. You know, and I do that sort of audit on myself on a fairly regular basis, possibly too often. But I don't know. But yeah, that's the kind of internal commentary for me, my operating system, which is a question I ask, if you'll forgive me, on my podcast because I'm very interested in people's operating systems. If I turn that question on myself, then that's the dial that I'm always looking to. That I'm looking to turn up, you know, am I getting more out of this situation, day, hour, minute, year?
So let's get you on the open road of the curated structure of the Good Listening To show. It's going to be a clearing a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. Also, the person that works for you within What Crisis, Jane Sankey, was really wonderful at helping me ask you the question of whether you'd like to be in it. Because I remember a phone call where I rang up and was talking about random squirrels, and she went, "This is interesting. I'll ask Andy and see what he thinks." So
you had her at squirrel.
Yes, you had me at squirrel. So we're going to get to your squirrels. So let's get going. So Andy Coulson, where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
Well, I suspect, like a lot of your guests, it's home for me. And, you know, there's a period in my life where I was removed from my home when I was sent to prison. And so my appreciation of that environment was then and is now, you know, pretty heightened. I had a conversation recently with Paul McKenna, the hypnotherapist, on my podcast, and we were talking about manifestation, and I was, you know, getting him to chat through the process. He's just written a book on manifesting, and as he was talking, I was thinking to myself, I'm not sure I've ever really manifested, but then it occurred to me that actually that I did, because when I was in prison, I would often, as you'd find yourself in prison with too much time on your hands, I would often just think about being at home, sat in front of the fire, my family around me, my dog at my feet, you know, maybe a glass of wine, and I would think very, very hard about that, and I was manifesting. I was definitely sort of in his definition of it, I was manifesting. Now, whether or not that actually helped me to get through and then eventually, you know, get to that point where I stepped through the door and was able to do that, you know, and I remember that day very well when I did. I don't really know, but I know that my, you know, that my default clearing is for sure, you know, that place. Sat with my family. I've got three sons, and with my wife Eloise. Sadly, the dog that I was in my mind at that time We lost him a little while later, but we have another Ferdinand. He's an important part of our lives.
That's a really beautiful manifestation of a serious happy place. You're clearing, you know, home is where the heart is. And to have imagined that from the moment of despair behind the bars to then pull you through is a really unique, no one's ever interpreted it with that answer. So we're going to be in front of the fire, Shea household at Coulson. You can have the dog, the family, the wine. It's all there. That's your clearing. That's your serious happy place. I'm now going to interfere, if I may, and interrupt your clearing by arriving with a tree. And because of my acting background, this is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit Beckett-y, a bit deliberately existential. I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. How do you like these apples? You've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, Andy Coulson, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's, squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you, sometimes called shiny object syndrome. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test, so I'll curate you gently through that. So back to shaking the canopy of your tree as you see fit, and you can go as deep as you like, when you like, how you like, if you like, through this structure. So four things, first of all, that have shaped you, Andy Coulson.
Well, I hesitate because I suspect you've had similar answers. But, you know, as with everyone, what shaped me is my upbringing. I think that's what gave me my work ethic. I think that's what gave me that productivity drive that I have. And I think actually that's what gave me, or at least kind of fueled or enabled my resilience. And I have a fair dose of that, I think. And if I track that back, I think I get that from my mum for sure, who's a very resilient individual. She's had some very tough stuff in her life. And I think I don't know how much of it is biography versus biology. I think it's probably a bit of both. And I think that's the case. I certainly think that's the case for me. And then I think about, when I think about my upbringing, I don't just think about my family in the immediate environment, because there's some tough stuff as well. You know, I mean, a lot of other people go through, but, you know, my parents divorced when I was about 11. It's not a good age for a divorce.
Are they both still with us, your mum and dad?
Yes, they're both still with us. Yeah. In fact, yeah. I'll soon be celebrating my father's 90th birthday. He's in very good nick, and my mum too. And they're friendly, and it's all been very civilized over the years, but certainly the divorce had an impact on me, I think. And I think also added to my resilience. You know, I was having to deal with stuff as a sort of an 11-year-old boy that I think actually I was pretty, you know, pretty tough at the time. But I think I took the resilience from it for sure, which is a positive. But then it's not just about family. It's about the other people that kind of are around your life as a young person. And, you know, when I was 16 years old, I decided I was going to go in the Air Force because my dad was in the Air Force and my oldest brother was in the Air Force. And my plan was to try and be the first member of my family to get a commission. And I was an air cadet. I loved it all. And I was on track to do that, actually. And then I did some work experience on the local paper, on the Evening Echo in Basildon. And I met a guy called Peter Owen, who was the deputy editor of that paper. And he became a bit of a mentor of mine. And I wanted to go to work as soon as I finished my O-levels, as they were. I wanted to go to work when I was 16, and he wouldn't let me. And he made me go and do my A-levels, which I really didn't want to do. But I did that, and he did it with the promise that if I did well in my A-levels, then he'd give me an interview and give me a chance of getting on the training scheme to become a journalist. And that's exactly what he did. 2 years later, I got a job with the Evening Echo. I went on their training scheme for 6 months and then became an indentured journalist.
He delivered on his promise of a
class. He delivered on his promise. Peter Owen, no longer with us.
Okay. That was my next question.
Unfortunately. Very, very well attended funeral down in Billericay, where he lived and was a proper pillar of the community. Peter sort of set me on a path, really. And then from there, I got shifts up into the national newspapers. And from there, you know, my sort of journalistic career took off. So that's where I'd start. I think I'd wrap all that up, if you'll allow me, into kind of, you know, upbringing and influences early in my life. My wife and family have shaped me. I've learned so much from them, still do. And then from me a bit as well, I hope. Eloise, my wife's an amazing woman. She just recently started a business. She's an acupuncturist after 3 years of training. She's doing brilliantly with that. She's our sort of family Yoda, which is more complimentary than perhaps it first sounds.
I would take it for her as a compliment.
I will often say, right, you are. I'm very, very lucky. I married brilliantly. Without doubt, the best question I have ever asked anybody was asked of Eloise when I said, will you marry me? Without doubt, my best moment. And then three cracking kids, three sons. So they, you know, they shaped me. I learned from them. They're amazing.
And if I may, back to the Dickens quote, the best of times, the worst of times, it was the best question you ever asked, but also it was the lows for the highs, the nature of a relationship that has all its challenges. And to be a constant in that through life's challenges, adversities, hurdles is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. It's been an amazing and at times difficult, largely due to me, her marriage. She's an amazing individual. So I'm incredibly, incredibly lucky.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think I would, if you'll allow me, give a brief mention to, you know, my clients, because they have shaped me. I was trying to think whether or not there's a sort of equivalent in earlier parts of my life. And I think there are, you know, I mean, colleagues really, you know, in the various jobs that I've held influence you, you know, kind of hugely. And I've worked with some brilliant people over the years. I've been so lucky in so many different environments, newspapers included. You know, one of the sort of, I guess I could say great shames. I don't know whether that's the way to describe it. But one of the great shames for me is at the time of my time in newspapers. You know, now I've been so characterized. In a certain way, and with good reason to an extent. So this is not a whinge. I'd be the last person to whinge about it. And I think it'd be grossly hypocritical. So I'm not doing that. But, you know, the difficulties of newspapers, and I was a Sun man more than I was a News of the World man for most of my career. But in both places, you know, were full of very bright, very funny, very hardworking, decent people. And you can have your view on the tabloid press, which I think is perhaps a separate discussion as to you know, the whys and wherefores of it. But, you know, they were brilliant places in lots of ways. They're very meritocratic. You know, I'm a lad from a, you know, born in a council house in Essex. My parents worked very hard to get out of that council house. I took the journey that I briefly described through local newspapers, and then I ended up as a national newspaper editor. And not at any point in that journey did anyone ever say to me, where did you go to school, Sunshine?
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to know whether or not I could do the job and whether I was up to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, people take a view as to whether I was or I wasn't, ultimately. But I had an amazing career in newspapers, surrounded by amazing people. And then in politics, I was plunged into an entirely different world. With some truly brilliant people. And again, you know, the world of politics gets characterized in a certain way. Again, with some justification, I would say, but it's also full of some brilliant people who, frankly, could, you know, spend their time, effort doing other things that would be considerably greater reward. Some truly big brains that I worked around, that I learned from, and I was able to help as well. I contributed for sure. That was a brilliant environment. So if you'll allow me, I'll wrap all that up again together. with clients and colleagues.
And which of those parts of your narrative would you describe as your halcyon days? When were you at your happiest in the...
Oh, I'm at my happiest now, for sure.
Good answer, yeah.
For sure, without any shadow of a doubt. I'm happier in every regard now than I've ever been in my life. And that's a good thing to be able to say at 57. But that doesn't mean that there weren't some great moments. And there were, you know, some great moments. Also some, you know, pretty useless ones, which brings me to my final thing that shaped me, and that would be my failures. You know, and I've had plenty, pretty public, played out in a way that was, you know, difficult to handle at the time. Again, not whinging about it, that would also be hypocritical, but you know, pretty difficult. And the most difficult bit of it was so long and difficult to manage, and difficult really to know and how you could deal with it. And I took about a year, I think. My troubles were sort of 5 years in, you know, across the whole piece. The first year, I sort of slightly lost my head, didn't really know how to deal with it. So much incoming. My career sort of folded very quickly. When that happens, you know, all the parts of your life that, you know, you have built, you know, crumble pretty quickly. Ours certainly did. You know, I was unemployable, as I mentioned earlier, pretty quickly. And then just thrown into a long, very long legal process that I didn't really know where it was going to end. And it was multifaceted as well. And that ended eventually in 2014 with a conviction. I was on trial for three charges, and I sort of won two, lost one.
Yeah,
very, very significant one. And that's when I went to prison. But when I was in prison, I knew that I would be coming out and going straight into another trial, because there was another matter in Scotland, which was very, in my view, politically motivated. This is all around the time of the Scottish independence vote, and other factors. But fortunately, so I did come out of prison. I did go straight into another trial, the consequences of which would have been pretty serious had it gone wrong, but I was acquitted in that trial, thankfully, and quite rightly, and that's the point at which I could start to think about the future. And my first thought was, well, you know, what are you going to do about these failures? And as I touched on earlier, my view was, well, I'm not going to try and escape them. I'm not going to try and put them in a box. I'm not going to move abroad or create a business with some, you know, mysterious name. I'm not going to try and operate in the shadows. I'm not going to write that book and then follow that route of becoming, you know, notorious, as I touched on. What I'm going to do is be me.
Yes.
Right. I'm going to be me, and it will either work or it won't work. And fortunately, it's worked.
It reminds me of that Oscar Wilde quote, "Be yourself because everyone else is taken." And the source of resilience in order to be a phoenix and rise again is to tap into your own resolve and persist and tenacity.
I think so. Yeah. You know, and I had time, and although I was very aware of my failures, I was also aware that, you know, what we don't do in our prisons, thankfully, is sort of lobotomize. I still have the same brain. I still think the same way. I still have the same abilities. You know, and I've been in some quite interesting rooms helping people through some quite interesting things and advising along the way. And none of that had been taken from me, those abilities. What had been taken from me was the sort of ability to put it to work.
Yeah.
And so I had to remake that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the easiest of tasks. It was a challenge sitting down for the first time, trying to convince someone that they need you in their life as an advisor.
Yes.
You know, was not a straightforward process, but I believed, fundamentally, I believed in my abilities. I believed that I had something useful to contribute, and I believe and still believe that if you've got someone in the room who's lived a bit, got some scars, who knows what it is to lose a reputation, which is obviously the area that I work in,
yes,
then that can be very useful.
And that was to my point about being a bit of a player manager. I know it's a slightly fatuous analogy, but the idea that you've been there, you've done it, you've got the T-shirt, you've experienced it. Therefore, that's seen as a valuable commodity because you've hit rock bottom and you've lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, and then, but as a, you know, in any profession, the proof is in the work that you deliver. You know, the reason we've been successful is not just because I've been able to sit in front of enough people and say, oh, by the way, you know, I think I can put all this failure to work for you. The reason we've been successful is because the work that we produce is pretty good and pretty useful.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we make some promises in our business and promises that I have in my working life that I'll always have a view, which might sound a bit strange for an advisor, but there are lots of advisors out there who don't necessarily have a view when it matters. That I'll be available, which is very important, particularly for people who are going through a difficulty, and that I'll be right more than I'm wrong. So I don't promise that I'll be right all the time, because how can I be? I'm a human being, but I will be right more than I'm wrong. I'm very, very confident that I'll be able to deliver that. And that's, you know,
I would have been very surprised if you were to say you didn't have an opinion, of course.
Yeah, no, trust me, it's not always the case, particularly when things are sticky, you know, particularly in politics. You know, there's, I've been in lots of rooms where there's been sticky stuff to discuss.
Yeah.
And the ability for people to disappear into the wallpaper in politics, it does happen.
Yes.
I've never been a sort of wallpaper kind of bloke. I tend to take a step forward when things are difficult rather than a step back.
My dad used to say it, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. That's the idea. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be the full thing that shaped me, I think.
Wonderful. Sorry, not wonderful that you had failures, but wonderful for the interpretation of the four things that have shaped
you. Well, we can talk about that. I think I don't know if I'd necessarily use the word wonderful, but I'd certainly say that I'd rather have a life with failures than a life without failures. That is for sure. Because if you have a life without failures, you know, what are you going to learn? You know, if it depends what your view of what it's all about. Without wishing to get
on to inspirational quotes later on as well. So this is quite interesting. Also, as you were speaking, there is a lovely question construct later on about with the gift of hindsight, which I'm fascinated to get to when we get there. Again, there's no agenda in what I'm saying. I'm just really enjoying the curation of this journey in your case as well.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Brand Strand Founder Stories, for business owners like you to be able to tell your company story, talk about your purpose, and amplify your brand. Together, we get into the who, the what, the how, the why you do what you do. And then, crucially, we find out exactly where we can come and find you to work with you and to book your services. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.